Hey, everybody. It is Thursday, October 18th, 2018. It's a little bit after 11. And I am not John Williams. He is on vacation. This is Patty Vasquez. I host weeknights. I got nervous all of a sudden. I host weeknights right here on WGN Radio with Andre Darlis. And joining me today are... Go ahead. Do we do this in a certain order? You guys looked around like Steve has to go first all the time.
I'm Steve Bertrand, host of the Business Lunch on WGN Radio.
Scott Stantis, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, member of the board, and also creator of the comic strip Prickly City and the Prickly City podcast right here on WGN Plus.
I'm Eric Zorn, the columnist from the Tribune, and I am not a baby.
I didn't know that was on the table. All right, then. All right, let's get started. I know because we're all in the media, this is the one I wanted to get your thoughts on, because Turkish investigators now believe that Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi was killed by a 15-man Saudi hit team not long after he entered the Turkish consulate for some paperwork on October 2nd. President Trump has made several statements, including it was possible that rogue killers had murdered Khashoggi. He also has said that this was another instance where people were in a rush to assume someone... in this instance, the Saudi prince was guilty in some way, in the same way that Judge Kavanaugh had been portrayed as guilty. He is now publicly urging the Turkish government to turn over all evidence, and including the audio recordings. There comes a point where it seems as though we are putting our interest, because Saudi Arabia is one of the largest oil producers, one of our largest purchasers of military weaponry. They also invest about $8 billion in startup companies here in the United States.
And a stalwart against Iran.
Yes.
I mean, it's not just about the things we sell and buy from them. They're a stop there.
They're a part of our plans of developing Middle East relationships. So what do you guys think as far as... this is a tough one, because where do our values and our interests intersect here?
Well, it's a tough one, clearly, but this idea that we are still floating out there that, we don't know who did it, maybe it's just rogue killers, and maybe they were interrogating him and his limbs started falling off. Yeah. It's just appalling. I think we need to name it and shame it right away. I think there need to be some severe sanctions and penalties for this kind of thing. It is unacceptable, the human rights record that Saudi Arabia has, and its relationship to freedom of the press. And I think we can't expect them to be like us, to adhere to our values exactly. But I think to let this go, to say, it happens, a rendition gone wrong, rogue killers, that's all nonsense. This was an ordered up hit, and we have to decide. We have to make a strong statement that there's going to be a price to pay for this.
Let me ask you guys this question. We just had some journalists from Mexico in the editorial board meeting this morning, and many of them talked about how their fellow journalists are on the run. They're being killed. Here's a name that no one's heard anything about: Victoria Marinova.
Nope, no, nor
any bells. She's a very popular television journalist in Bulgaria. She was recently absconded by government people, raped, and murdered. None of you hear about this?
None of us heard.
No, this is happening worldwide, and we have a president who prides himself in calling the press the enemy of the people. And so, frankly, and this may be going way too far, and I'm sure I'm going to hear comments on this, I don't think this bothers him a hell of a lot.
Well, I don't think it bothers him very much. What indication is he given that he's bothered at all by it?
Well, it's a Washington Post reporter, so Bezos failing Washington Post.
Well, for me, the statement where he said that he doesn't have any interest, any financial interest in Saudi Arabia, right?
Horse feathers, his son.
Well, but wait, then this morning they had a montage of him on the campaign saying how much he loves the Saudis. They pay him hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yes.
I mean, out of his mouth. He's bragging about how much money he makes from Saudi Arabia, and then this week denying that he has any financial interest.
We defend Saudi Arabia, and I have many friends from Saudi Arabia, very nice people. They buy my apartments, they rent my space. I'm not going to... I'm in sort of a different position. I'm always like... Defending.
Yeah, it's this whole story. And so, yes, it comes back to vital American interests in the region, a bulwark against Iran. A friend of mine, a progressive friend of mine, had a very funny line earlier this week. He said, okay, now's the time. Now's the time we invade Saudi Arabia. It takes care of all the problems. It gets rid of Wahhabism. It gets us the oil. It takes care of a lot of the radical Islamists. It saves lives in Yemen where they're just bombing indiscriminately.
What could go wrong? What could go wrong with that? Taking over a Middle Eastern country?
Exactly. Exactly. But
deposing their leaders?
It's weird that they are...
I didn't know you were friends with John Bolton. When did that...
No, quite the opposite. But it's funny that Saudi Arabia remains and has been for decades our partners in the war against terror. This is ridiculous.
Our partners in the war against terror were most of the 9/11 hijackers came from.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, but clearly, you need boycotts, you need sanctions to address this particular issue. This can't stand. You can't be taking Washington Post journalists and luring them into your embassy and dismembering and killing them. You can't just let that pass and go, well, but you do buy a lot of oil and hardware from us.
So they're going to cancel one or two fighter jet contracts. That's going to be it, right? I mean, that seems to me that's...
Well, you don't go to Davos in the desert, maybe? Start with that.
Mnuchin canceled today.
Oh, yeah, he did.
Yes, he did.
Good. Okay,
yeah.
I missed that. I was...
So. No, and this is the issue is that, as Scott mentioned, does the president care when he constantly is attacking the press? Is he somehow, encouraging, not necessarily saying go and harm reporters, but, don't give them cover, that there's nowhere to hide, including in a consulate or, and with cameras and audio and all the evidence that they have now that seems to be, the kind of information the Turkish government is starting to share. We don't have anybody there. Khashoggi is a U.S. resident. We are not sending any investigators there. He has not instructed the FBI to participate in this at all.
Well, we don't know that, but I mean...
The FBI has said that they're not involved.
Did they? Because he was asked about that yesterday, and he says, maybe I have.
Maybe I have.
I'm not going to tell you. Maybe I have.
We don't know. Possibly, probably.
Many people are saying.
Everybody thinks.
Everybody thinks. We also have yesterday received Mayor Emanuel, who's leaving office next year. He has presented his budget, and this will have obviously long-term effects on the city, our budget. We are still in a financial crisis. He has proposed cost cutting. He says that there are property tax
surpluses. Can I just interrupt?
Yes, surpluses, yes.
Can I just interrupt? You have very nice introductions to these topics.
Yes.
You wrote them in pen, longhand?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Is that all right?
She's rolling it old school, man. She's analog.
It is. It's not. It's perfectly fine.
it's sort of sweet.
It is.
Stop. What?
I love the hearts over the eyes.
Yeah. You can walk that back if you want to. There aren't any of those.
Okay,
yeah.
I take that back.
I think you might want to.
Anyway.
Yes. Go ahead. Anybody have any thoughts on Mayor? And this is a slightly tearful goodbye.
You all know what a mentor does for a young man and woman. You know it as parents, and you see it in your children. For too many of our children, it is not possible.
Last week, he gave about $500,000 to his favorite alderman, which reinforced the idea that if you're nice to him and if you play along, you'll get some treats.
He loves being mayor, and I still don't really understand why he's not running again. Just as a matter, I mean, he loves the job, clearly. I don't think...
Because he's not very good at it?
Well, we can debate that. I mean, the question is, you need to have someone running the city of Chicago who is a technocrat at heart, someone who really knows how to get, transit systems and schools and police departments and waste disposal lines, right? All those things that a mayor has to do. You need someone with a lot of competence, and you need someone with a lot of passion for it. Now, I'm not saying at all that he did a good job in every area, but he loves the job. And I still don't quite understand. I mean, I get that his poll numbers weren't great. The Laquan McDonald verdict, I think, the Jason Van Dyke guilty verdict would have started to put that issue in the rearview mirror because we're not going to vote until February. I think that he had tons of money to run.
You still
campaign.
Think there's more story here. You think that there's something else he's gunning for.
I just don't get it. I mean, when you listen to that speech yesterday, when you hear the emotion in his voice about the things that he really cares about, I don't understand exactly why. Does anyone else pick up like, oh,
no, I agree.
He's getting out well. I mean, I understood why Daley left. Daley, the city was just ready to corkscrew into the ground when Daley left. He realized that he had sold all of his seed corn, and there was no place nowhere for him to go. Manuel doesn't seem to have that be facing that particular problem. I don't So I don't know.
Yeah, I think I disagree with you on a lot of these points. I think, first of all, he wasn't very good at the job. I think you're right. I think there's a lot of things being moved around right now where, you know, Tony moves in, he moves there. You look at Chewie gets Congress. There's some kind of something alchemy going on here.
You think there's a whole fix in, or not a fix, but a... Yeah, the slot. The slots feels, are already set up.
It sure feels like it, because Eric is correct in that. Why would you leave a job that, you know, you have? It's high profile. He gets to do all this neat stuff. I would argue that he's, and I would say he's a failure on a lot of, like, the budget and not addressing seriously the pensions, building debt in the billions of dollars that are, some of it at exorbitant interest rates because our bonds are near junk. The violence on the South Side hasn't been abated. The Laquan McDonald thing, I mean, it's all of it comes together to say that, you know, the Riverwalk's nice.
It is very, very nice, but a lot of neighborhoods would say that they're not seeing any benefits from that kind of investment.
Has there ever been a time in the history of the city of Chicago when the neighborhoods have not said that?
I would imagine not.
I would imagine that's just sort of an institutional difference of opinion. We've heard about that. I've been here for over 30 years. Maybe Harold Washington did more for the neighborhoods, but I think there were complaints then about the neighborhoods.
Okay.
So the question in my mind, you think Toni Preckwinkle is going to just slide into the job? Because I don't think that she will. I mean, she might
really?
Win. She might win. I don't think she's going to slide in by any means. I don't think she's going to win a majority in February. She might not even be in the top two. I mean, I don't really know where the electorate's going with this.
The interview that Rahm Emanuel gave on Steve Cochran's show when he said that he didn't think that the next mayor was already in the race, I don't think he met Toni Preckwinkle either, and there are rumors that there's somebody else who might announce after they win their statewide office.
Could that have been Bill Daley, though, given their relationship?
I don't know. But
you're thinking of Susana Mendoza.
I think a lot of people are thinking about Susana Mendoza.
I'm thinking of Susana Mendoza. I like her spirit. I mean, I know she's not, her progressive credentials are not pure. People can talk about her relationship was too close with Mike Madigan.
Wins in November and then...
She wins in November for controller, and then she immediately begins gathering petitions to run for mayor. I think she gets about 3 weeks to get 12,000 signatures? 12,500?
With Madigan behind her, that's not an issue.
I don't know that Madigan will be behind her. I mean, Madigan's got a lot of possible allies in the race.
Well, he's not necessarily somebody that you want to have vouch for you or...
Well, but
quietly, yes.
He can get the signatures.
Absolutely.
There are people already gathering signatures for Mendoza. Daley's campaign messaged me a photo of petitions that were being passed at the Women's March last weekend. It's Mendoza for mayor, and so I've forwarded them on to Abdon, who's
so it's Susana's, less of a rumor and more paperwork.
Well,
actually.
He said, "Well, this is a rogue effort. These are independent people getting
Abdon Palace."
Everyone saying rogue.
Abdon, yes,
another rogue.
Abdon Palace.
Well, they're not torturing or petitioning.
Unofficial, but apparently you can use those signatures even if they're not officially sanctioned by the candidate.
Can I ask you a quick question? This is coming from someone who does not know the Mendoza name well, but people think incredibly highly of her. She's in the top of the polls, most of the polls that are. And why? This isn't snarky or anything. I just don't know why she's on top of the polls like she is.
Well, she's very
What's
lively. She's a very lively presence. She's very forceful. She's the one who took the job of controller, and she just basically took on Rauner
right away.
Do you know who the state treasurer is? Anybody know the name of him? Frerichs,
but he's very tall.
But very tall, nice guy. But he's not a strong personality. Susana has a big personality, very fiery, and speaks well, presents well, is quick and funny, and I mean, just those things alone make her a good candidate. She's an attractive candidate. Now, again, I have not yet picked apart her record for things that might make me not want to vote for her, but I think she'd be a very good candidate in the race, much more dynamic than any other candidate so far.
She taps into a demographic that I think Chewie Garcia obviously was able to speak to when it comes to the Latino neighborhoods in Chicago, and also being a female on the ticket helps. I think Toni Preckwinkle has a lot of baggage. I don't know what you guys think about that part of it, but I also, as far as being, and I know you said use the word attractive, and I just want to make sure people, I think that that means in the sense that what she presents on as a candidate, she brings a lot to the table. I had the weird experience of being at the state fair, the Illinois State Fair in Springfield, and they had the Democratic Party tent, you know, where they say all, you know, they sort of champion all the things they've achieved, and someone came in ready to pick a fight with one of the volunteers in the tent. They just thought they'd go, let me ask you something about how I pay taxes. And I hear this voice, and she goes, sure, what kind of questions do you have? And it was Controller Mendoza, who just happened to be in the tent, and she laid out everything for this guy. She was like, well, what district do you live in? Well, as a matter of fact, I can show you on a map how much you get back in state dollars as opposed to what you guys pay in. And then he goes, well, and I kept asking her questions about prison reform and about, you know, sentencing and all these, and she had answers for everything. So she, I think, could be a formidable candidate
for mayor. Yeah, she's quick, I think.
And she chased down a guy who was drunk driving. I don't know if you saw a video of that.
I remember that.
Right. Yeah, John Boyle.
This is off topic, but Kurt Summers announced this week that
he's not running for mayor or anything. He said
not running for re-election as city treasurer.
Yeah,
and I was surprised by that. I thought he considered himself sort of a rising star and was certainly pretty aggressive with the media and all of that. Is there something there that I don't know?
I had not heard anything.
I don't know. I was surprised that he wasn't running for treasurer.
I thought he might be just
one of those people biding their time, because a lot of times you get into these lower offices and you kind of wait for things to develop. And so, but you know, the mayor's race is still, I think, wide open in terms of
who's gonna, does
Chance the Rapper's endorsement of Enya, is this Enya, is that her last name?
Amara Enya, I think.
Enya. Does that play a role? Is that gonna move any votes? Or is you know, you've got Dorothy Brown who's got a constituency. Willie Wilson who's got a constituency. You've got Gary McCarthy.
Willie's already
got
up on TV. I saw Willie's ads on TV.
Is he really?
Yeah.
I mean, it seems to me this is one of those races where like 20% could put you in the top two.
Well, and I think Paul Vallis still has a lot of name recognition. He has an interesting plan for the city, which is basically investing in neighborhoods where you actually can buy investments.
Well, Vallis, and it seems like Vallis and Preckwinkle, are we completely hijacking your script here because we're going on and on about the mayor's. But it seems to me like Vallis and Preckwinkle have this kind of this nerdy appeal, right? They're both like kind of wonky people who are, I mean, Vallis has a bunch of plans, it's ideas. He's not the most dynamic guy, but he does seem like a very serious person. And he's the kind of person who, you know, you think, well, he could run things because he thinks about these things. He's not just a glad hander.
He's just got to come up with shorter answers.
Right. No, I'm saying really? He's like, there's that lane.
Then
there's the activist lane. And then there's the person who's got like Gary McCarthy, who's got his constituency, obviously. But I don't know how large that is.
So let me speak in an inconsiderate way. So we're talking about Susana Mendoza, who, you know, would get a Latino vote, right? Is there going to be a candidate here who's going to be the white candidate?
That's a fair question.
I think McCarthy does that.
Vallis,
I mean, for the conservative.
Vallis.
Well,
Daly.
Vallis is the wonky.
Bill Daly? I mean,
Bill Daly doesn't seem to want anything.
It's white just, people, we need more representation.
When are white men going to be represented?
But
you're going to listen to our concerns.
Wait your turn.
Us too.
It's not the year of the white man.
If you're saying 20% gets you in,
maybe.
If they're going to be 20% of the Chicago electorate who's going to vote for a white guy because he's lean toward, and I don't know what the answer to that is.
Do you mean more of a conservative white vote? Because all of them are running as Democrats, but where they land on that, I mean, Gary McCarthy is former law enforcement. He does say he's a Democrat. He has a degree in history, so I'm a fan of that. But I don't know.
No, I'm posing the question. I don't know the answer to it.
I mean, it is the more candidates are in, the more lanes open up. It seems to me you've got a situation where somebody like McCarthy, who I don't give a whole lot of chance to, one reason is because he was wrong about the Jason Van Dyke. Well, he's wrong. The jury said that he was wrong about the Jason Van Dyke story. He was defending Van Dyke, which is not a popular position to take among a lot of people. But, you get 20% of the people. You sure? They say, yeah.
Right.
Well, turning, as long as we are talking a little bit about race, J.B. Pritzker, of course, gubernatorial candidate on the Democratic ticket, is responding after 10 campaign staffers have filed suit alleging racial discrimination and harassment. And I think that a lot of people are also thinking maybe this was a, move for a money grab because they demanded $7.5 million. But otherwise, they would go to the press and share all of these details.
Which
they did go to the press. And I read your piece, Eric, about how a lot of these staffers were actually late to the campaign, some of them over the summer, some within the last month. And not to diminish when somebody is experiencing harassment or discrimination, but, it is one of those things. Was there a process? Was there anyone they could turn to and say, hey, I'm not comfortable with when we're in this racial sensitivity training class that they're using certain language or that I wasn't given the microphone. What kind of conversations were they having before they went, we're going to need $7.5 million?
Yeah, I don't know. They had a list of demands, and one of them was $7.5 million. Others were so fairly reasonable, saying that if Pritzker gets elected, he needs to have, you know, racial diversity officers, mm-hmm. and he needs to have some sort of processes in place. I have no doubt that these people felt put upon. I have no doubt that there is, you know, racism and racial feelings in campaigns in general. And these are you know, these are people who work in these very intense environments, and it's very hard to referee their claims. The document itself that was filed, 10 pages, very light on specifics. The kinds of things they talked about were, this woman sat between two black men at a meeting to try to silence them. Like, that sounds like, that's like just conjecture. And they talk about one guy who said, well, they asked this guy to cut his dreadlocks so he would be less threatening appearing or something like that. And the guy himself came on Facebook and said, that's not what happened.
And do you think it was impactful that there's audio of JB having conversations with Blagojevich saying, well, we've got the black thing covered and I'll take care of that. And I mean, that doesn't help.
And that's an old tape, but yeah, that's true. That story was had a lot of currency earlier this year, where he was talking, this is the FBI wiretap, and it has Pritzker talking to Blagojevich. And they're talking about who to run. I forget which office they were talking about, but Jesse White came up and he said, well, he's the least offensive.
Yes.
Which I think what he was saying is that he's the most, you know, polished or something. I'm not sure exactly what he meant by that, but it certainly sounded bad.
I got a great idea for you, though.
Okay.
Jesse White. It covers you on the African-American thing.
Correct.
He's Senate material in a way that Emil Jones isn't, if I may say.
Okay.
So he is dealing with that baggage. But this is a very curious thing that this comes up 3 weeks before the election, that these campaign staffers, who are still evidently supporting him, filed this lawsuit, which is going to be pretty damaging to his campaign, I would think, because he's going to have to get... He needs to get good support in the African American community. He's got an African American running mate. Mm-hmm. He still has an organization in the African American community. But this is an interesting bomb to throw at him.
Yeah, the claims are just false. I'm very proud of the campaign that we put together. We've got an incredibly diverse staff. You know, our senior staff, a majority African American. Overall, our staff, 45% people of color. Juliana and I have been made a centerpiece of our campaign, equality and inclusion diversity in our campaign. And we're going to have the most diverse cabinet and diverse administration that's ever been in the state of Illinois.
The people who filed suit lost all their leverage when they filed the suit. So I'm not sure what they expect to happen now.
Yeah, I think it smells of politics. I mean, I know it's a political campaign, but it just smells, and it's ridiculous. And I don't think it will have any impact at all.
It smells of politics, but I would say I have no belief at all that Rounder had anything to do with this. There's some rumors out there that, oh, this is a Republican scheme. No.
He can't run a state. I mean, good Lord.
No way. Wow. No way. Anyway.
Any thoughts, Steve?
No, I agree. I think it probably is embarrassing, but I don't think in the end it'll be very damaging.
It is a moment in our politics where you look at the big picture and everything that's going on. I also saw the story about a judge who has decided that boys as young as 10 years old can be locked up. Now, the boys, have you looked at this case at all? I had a chance to read the story. I know that
I looked at it a little
might
bit.
Might have taken a look at it. But the two boys, I think the hard thing to take, not just that he says we can lock up 10-year-old boys, is that they already have previous gun charges. So, you know, it's...
So the judge is bucking a county ordinance, Cook County ordinance that said no one 12 or younger can be sent to temporary juvenile detention. And the judge said, well, the state law says 10, not 12, and so the state law trumps the county ordinance, and so I'm following the state law, not the county.
And here, we talk about how do we cut off the amount of, guns that are on the street, the violence that we are experiencing in certain neighborhoods, and we are saying that we have 10-year-olds who are already using these weapons, right? How do we fix this? But is locking them up at 10 years old part of trying to stem that, trying to stop these kids from growing up and being gangbangers? Is this going to help?
That's the American answer to crime today, and it's terrible because it doesn't work. We have the highest incarceration rate of any industrialized nation by a lot. And it simply doesn't work if you don't have another component that helps recidivism helped stop that, the number one housing of mentally ill people in this country is prisons. That's our answer for everything. And so this, I'm sorry, this just plays into my whole, I hate
this. Okay, I get that, but you've got two 12-year-old boys here who have been...
10-year-old boys.
Had gun...
Oh, the two 12-year-olds, right.
Yeah, had gun crime convictions in the past and have run away from home after being charged in the past. And the judge said, not only does the state law trump it, the people will be safer with these two not running around.
Do you think that's not true, Scott? I mean, I'm just curious. It does seem to me, I know the 10-year-olds can be dangerous. I mean, I know we like to think of them as like little wee children, but they can commit gun crimes. I'm just wondering, for me, something like this really calls for almost a super juvenile rehabilitative environment for these kids to be in, because I think just saying, well, you go back home into your home environment, which is clearly toxic in some way, or do you say we need to put you in some sort of residential, some sort of place where you get the sort of education, nurturing, care, and rehabilitative treatment that you need to become a functioning...
That's the answer.
All the things we consider when we think of juvie hall.
Right, well, that's exactly the problem. Putting you into juvie does not seem to be the trick these days. So.
No, if you don't have a rehabilitation component to this alchemy, for a 10-year-old, a 12-year-old, a teenager, their brains aren't developed. If you're just throwing them into a pit, yes, it protects us. The fact that we have this incarceration rate is also our crime rate goes down when we throw more people in prison, just how it happens. But is that the answer? First of all, it's not cost effective. The systems that work in Europe particularly are the ones that have very stringent rehabilitation components to them, and they have a very low recidivism rate. Why don't we do something smart instead of
I think I agree with you in the big... I mean, I know I agree with you in the big picture. I absolutely do. But when it comes to these two boys at this moment... Mm-hmm.
This is what we have. Yeah, take them off the street now. But looking down the road, we've got to address this seriously and put serious resources towards it.
I think we're all in agreement, even though only one of us read the story, or two of us.
I read the radio version.
I'm happy to have a vehement opinion on a subject about which I know so little.
But I think it does have to do with our neighborhoods, with the violence that we're experiencing, and incarceration, and whether or not that's a solution to a long-term problem. But speaking of being informed on things, I wonder how much people are really doing... even want to know any more about politicians. We're less than 3 weeks away from the midterms. I'm trying to make sure that I am as informed as possible, whether it's from the judges to water reclamation. But I do you think that people are going, are the Democrats making any sort of headway into making any advancement when it comes to, what I'm saying is the Republicans now have complete control of the federal government on the national level. Is there any chance that the Democrats are going to take any seats in the Senate? It looks as though they're going to lose.
Do you want predictions? Because I have a prediction.
What's your prediction?
My prediction is Democrats take the House by only 3 to 4 votes, and the Republicans gain a seat in the Senate.
I think you might be right about that.
That sounds about right. I think it could be higher than that in the House. It could be 10 to 15 seats in the House. And I mean, every time I hear Steve Kornacki on MSNBC, who seems to be the guy who studies all the polls and crunches all the numbers, he seems very down on the idea that
there's going to be a big wave.
That the Senate can switch. It's a really heavy lift for Democrats. And all the polls you read say it's about a 25% chance, but. On the other hand, that's what people said about Trump's chances of being elected. Right?
So I think the Democrats in this election are like Charlie Brown running toward the football, and they've looked, they've been licking their chops. Here we come, 21 days, 19 days, 18 days, 2 days, and then the football gets pulled out, and the voters again are going to reward Donald Trump. I mean, I think that's going to be the case certainly in the Senate. I think the House probably will go to the Democrats, but I agree with you, Scott, that it's not going to be. I don't see this, and look at Beto O'Rourke, who, God, just stay out of the national spotlight. If you're a candidate, a Democrat running in a red state, stay away from the national news shows, because my daughter went to a taping of the Ellen Show a couple of months ago.
Was he there?
And Beto O'Rourke was one of the guests, And so people fall in love with this idea. The country does. It doesn't work. It's not going to work in Texas.
I'm just wondering, if you're a Texas voter, how do you look at Cruz putting his arm around Trump, who called him Lion Ted,
right.
Claimed his dad was involved in the JFK assassination?
Said his wife was ugly.
I
think, didn't he call her Horseface first before he called Stormy Daniels Horseface?
I believe so. That story's good enough
but
for me.
But he's still going to win, right? I mean, we look at these states and the Democrats think, oh, we're going to do it. Look at this guy.
It's Texas.
It's Texas. It's always going to be Texas.
Now, people look at Beto O'Rourke and say, why isn't he in Illinois? Why doesn't he live in our state? Because he does have he has got a Kennedy thing happening.
Well, it's
in a good way, not a Chris Kennedy thing, but
thing. He didn't mean that, Chris. But so now he'll be out, right? He's a sitting member of Congress, and he's going to run, and he'll lose. He's not on the ballot for his own seat.
Let's start a GoFundMe for him right now. I don't know. No,
go have fun.
Well, what do you think are the issues that people are going to be voting on? If people feel as though the economy's going well and jobs are fine, I mean,
I think the Kavanaugh nomination works for Democrats. I think had Kavanaugh not been approved, that would have really fired up Republican voters, and I think it would have, been much more difficult for Democrats to take the House had they won that fight. Now, that's a short-term game versus a long-term loss, but that's the way I see it.
I think the Republicans will, the Trump voter will come out and vote because they're old,
they watch a lot of Fox,
and they got nothing else to do.
They'd be a lot more angry had Kavanaugh been beaten.
Yeah.
And anger brings people out, I think, more than the satisfaction of victory.
And Trump has nationalized this election. He has gone around the country saying, "Vote for candidate X is a vote for me." And he's done that over and over again. And he's pushed all his chips in on this. His popularity is still under 50%. It's better than it was, I guess. He's polling a little better than he had been, to me, it looks like the House is going to go blue. But
well, the Senate was almost never just by the way the people who were up, it was going to be very difficult for the Democrats to take the Senate just by the number of the seats in the states and that were up for election this time.
Well, aside from doing all your research for the midterm elections, what do you recommend? This is where John always asks for your recommendations.
Okay, so I just flew back from England on a long flight and discovered a show that's on HBO called Barry. Has anyone seen
this
Barry?
Nick D is such a big fan of that show.
It's a
and
great
it won
show.
Several Emmys this year, actually.
Bill Hader plays this hitman, sort of disillusioned hitman, and he goes out to L.A., and I'm only a few episodes in, but he goes out to L.A. to kill someone and finds himself in an acting class led by Henry Winkler. And I think Winkler just won the Emmy. And all of a sudden, he gets the acting bug, and he's trying to shake the hitman bug in order to become an actor. It's Bill Hader. It's very deadpan, and the show's called Barry, and I'm loving it.
How many episodes is it?
It's one season out.
So it's like 12 episodes.
Yeah, I've seen just a couple.
So I get really wary of these long commitments.
Really?
No, I'm serious. If someone
says, Joanna know this?
Like, yeah, So anyway, congratulations, Scott's wedding anniversary.
Yeah,
was
37
yesterday.
Years.
Happy anniversary.
Very cool.
Yeah,
be married 37 years. That's my recommendation.
Anyway, I just want, when you get these long, people say, oh, you got to love this show. It's like six seasons, like 20 episodes. And like, no, I can't do that. Anyway, Scott?
Okay, yes. Well, yeah, be married to Janine for 37 years is one of my recommendations. But the serious one is we came back from England and I knew nothing.
World travelers. Wow.
Well, I knew nothing about the royal family. Nothing. Zero. Literally. So I started to read a lot about it. They're awful. They are terrible, awful, terrible people. This is, and so I just...
All of them without exception? There's no redeeming
factors? Well, until
factors.
You come up to the Queen Elizabeth, who I don't think has killed a family member. We're not sure. Mm-hmm. But the book I picked up, a friend passed along was The Plantagenets, the mm-hmm. Warrior Kings and Queens Who Made England by, I'm going to get this right, Dan Jones, hard name. I just finished the book. It was very enlightening. I'm just now reading his follow-up, which is The War of the Roses. And it's fascinating. But think of the mafia. Think of mafia families, and you pretty much have the royal family coming in history.
Okay.
It's fascinating.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Speaking of royalty.
Yes.
I'm going to give a... I'm going to talk about The Romanoffs, which is the new series from Matthew Weiner, the guy who did Mad Men. This is on Amazon. And it's about descendants of the Romanov family, the Russian royal family, who ostensibly survived the assassination attempt. And, you know, there are these shirt-tail relatives in various places. And it's this incredibly ambitious series that is, each one is a totally different story. They're 90 minutes long. They're like, each one's a little movie. I only saw one, and the first one, and it has to do with an aging member of the family, and they're trying to get her apartment from her, and there's a really nice performance by, I think her name is Inez Melab, who's a Muslim actress. Anyway, it's a very interesting show, very problematic. On Rotten Tomatoes, it got an exactly a 50.
Really?
Which is exactly how
right down the middle.
Which is how I felt about it. It's like, I really like parts of it. Other parts of it, I said, that does not work. That's really corny. But it's Matthew Weiner, and I loved Mad Men.
Mm-hmm.
So I would urge people to check it out. Maybe just the first episode of
Amanda
that.
Pete's in that, isn't she?
It's called The Romanoffs. Yeah, she is in another episode. She wasn't in the first episode. Uh-huh. I am not going to watch the rest of the episode. So that tells you where I am on this. It's like a movie that I kind of liked but kind of didn't. So
interesting recommendation.
What about you, Patty?
Well,
Vasquez?
I am a big fan of Halloween season, and I'm watching horror movies, and I just it's kind of a fun, quiet, gothic ghost story called The Woman in Black, which stars Daniel Radcliffe, who plays Harry Potter.
Oh, yeah.
And I really enjoyed it. I screamed, and when I scream at a horror movie, then it's done its job, hasn't it?
In the theater?
I just realized I actually love watching horror movies at home with my family. I never realized that before, it reminds me of growing up when my dad loved scaring me with scary movies. Like, he'd be like, I'll be right back, I'm gonna have a cigarette, and he'd come back and like really quietly come up by me and be like, you know, stuff like that. So I like candles, and we have snacks, and we watch horror movies.
Are you gonna go see the new there's a new
Halloween is supposed to be great.
Halloween, right?
The new Jamie Lee Curtis. It's basically a reboot, and you can ignore all of the other, like Halloween 2, Halloween 3. This is supposed to be the movie that should succeed the original Halloween.
I don't go to any of these.
Well.
Okay. My parents didn't appropriately scare me when I was a child.
Let's appropriately scare Eric when we get a chance, Scott.
President Trump gets reelected.
Thank you so much for joining us for the Mincing Rascals. We've got to run because there are other people that need this studio. John Williams will be back next week. Thank you, Scott Vasquez.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online at WGNradio.com. Plus, catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.